Humboldt State University has made a commitment to ensure that this is a place that is equitable for all. Coming up on the next Through the Eyes of Women, my conversation with Dr. Cheryl Johnson, the Executive Director of the Office of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion at HSU. With her new appointment, Dr. Johnson's expertise, experience, and background will only further enhance HSU's commitment. Welcome to Through the Eyes of Women, a program featuring the lives and perspectives of women, local, national, and international. Dr. Johnson, welcome to Through the Eyes of Women.
Thank you very much.
Why don't you start by explaining the role of the Office of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion here at Humboldt State?
What the office will be doing is working with faculty, the cabinet, the Senate, staff, in order to create a more equitable campus, a more inclusive campus. And really, it's already a diverse campus, but oftentimes things are inequitable or not everyone feels as welcome in the classroom, sometimes, you know, the community or different parts of the campus. So it's really a systems change kind of role, and that's what I have a lot of background in.
Tell me about your background in this area and what you will bring to Humboldt State.
I'm a clinical psychologist by training, and a lot of my work on that side of the house has been around historical trauma and various narratives of people of color who have experienced trauma historically in this country, as well as looking at equity. When you create equity or you increase equity, that means that you are decreasing racial predictability in a statistical sense. That means I can no longer say 20% of women don't do this, 40% of African Americans or Native Americans don't attain or grad. So when you eliminate that predictability in a statistical sense, that's really when you are creating equity.
Explain that historical trauma that you just mentioned and how systems, they interact with each other and how they can sometimes cause a bit of a conflict.
Right. I still hadn't completely answered your question. I ran a citywide equity initiative for the city of Berkeley where we worked with 28 community agencies, Berkeley Unified School District, Cal, Berkeley City College, just a citywide effort to increase equity in the city of Berkeley. So this is really a national issue, kind of as the country changes even more. The strengths of diversity need to be leveraged more so we can, you know, go into the 21st, 22nd century being a very strong country. And then your other question was?
About historical trauma.
Oh, right. Yes. When I've talked about historical trauma, there's trauma held in the white community as well as in the black community. Often when I've done diversity classes, they'll say, well, why does it always come back to black and white? Why does it always come back to black and white? Well, because that's kind of the unresolved legacy of our country, you know, that it was founded on slavery. And there's a trauma held in the white community about privilege, unearned advantages, as well as the institutionalized racism, you know, that African Americans have experienced here. So it's this sort of unresolved trauma that each group hasn't resolved yet. And it still plays out today in institutional racism, mass incarceration, economics, housing, et cetera.
And the initiative that you worked for with Berkeley was the Cradle to Career program. Mm-hmm. And instead of the school to prison pipeline that we are familiar with,
right.
Explain what that Cradle to Career program was about.
That will inform this work as well. Primarily first gen, which would be low-income white, refugee, immigrant population, as well as African-American and Latino. So when we say cradle to career, kindergarten readiness, that was one of our indicators, and that had a 12-people committee under it looking at how ready a child is when they get to kindergarten. And then, you know, what shows up if you're not kindergarten ready, literacy issues begin to happen in third grade. That's what the research shows us. And then attendance, and then math by ninth grade, proficiency in math. These were all measurable indicators because remember I said predictability in a statistical sense. So we had to measure and evaluate the various programs that we were doing, and then we had a college and career readiness indicator as well. So what you find, if you haven't had a grandfather that went to college, a grandmother, parents, you know, it's often a new experience for that family, particularly with low-income, first-gen, African-American, Latino. And sometimes they don't feel they belong there. They haven't internalized a competency that, yes, I belong in college. So we were doing several different programmatic, what I call equity interventions, to increase equity across the board there. And even the nonprofit agencies that served students had to align with the 2020 vision around equity. So I'm hoping eventually, once I get my sea legs here, that I can work in the community as well.
You mentioned something very interesting. We have a lot of first-generation students of color here who may not have encountered programs such as yours. How do we have success for our students of color here at Humboldt State?
And you also have some first-generation white as well, who this is also a new experience for. Like I said, it's a systemic approach, so you have to kind of work and train and work with faculty and how they deliver curriculum. Is it culturally relevant pedagogy that they're delivering in the classroom that makes me feel like I belong in this classroom? I hear some of my culture in there. You have to work with staff who create the climate and environment on our campus. And you work with the cultural centers here where, you know, because there's some responsibility on the students' part too to come and learn and grow socially, emotionally, as well as intellectually. So it's really a systemic approach. And then as well as building relationships out in the community. I'm a firm believer that change is in the relationship. So you have to build relationships not only with the city manager, the mayor, various people in the community, because we're two communities side by side, you know, really wanting to work together and welcome all students here and be inclusive of all students.
So the office is a research hub of sorts. Do you all do research annually with students, with faculty, in order to make this university more equitable?
Since when we say an inequity, it's something that you can measure in percentage. Like if we were just to look at housing, what we need to do is get the qualitative data and the quantitative data, and they tell us a story. So we'll be working in strong partnership, because it is a small office, we'll be working in strong partnership with the Office of Institutional Effectiveness, which does a lot of data collection and evaluation and design, because what we need to do is to measure, is anything changing? There's been a lot of a flurry of activities and trainings in the recent past, and I'd like to really get that more coordinated, more centralized in the newly forming Center for Teaching and Learning that will be run out of the library on campus, where you could really have trainings come through there, guest speakers. You could have instructional design working with culturally relevant pedagogy to help faculty design curriculum that meets that cultural relevant pedagogy better. And those things will need to be evaluated, because it's always about continuous quality improvement. Are we doing it? Are we moving the needle? And what is this telling us that we need to change? Or it's a kind of a quality improvement kind of process.
That was evident with HSU's strategic plan. Mm-hmm. It was a series of meetings during the 2014-15 academic school year to create a five-year plan and beyond for the university. And one of the main areas of the plan was equity and diversity. Is the university on track with the actions proposed under the strategic plans? And also, what do you intend to bring with it to enhance as the new executive director?
Well, yeah, I think we are on track. The Equity Alliance group was formed and doing a lot of work over the last 15, 18 months. I did GARE as well down in Berkeley. That's the Government Alliance for Racial Equity. My position getting created, and it's a position on Cabinet and Senate, which really puts me in a role of leadership and being able to communicate from top, you know, all the way down. So I think once we start measuring, once we start setting up, like I said, these strong partnerships with the Center for Teaching and Learning, partnerships out in the community. I would love, once the Center for Teaching and Learning is up and going, that K-12 teachers come through that from the community and take courses, you know, and get their CEUs through some educational courses that would be offered there. So I think we can meet our goals. Many people that I've talked to since coming up here, they say they think we're really ready for change here. It's complicated. The issue itself, race, racism, equity, you know, it doesn't mean I'm going to be equitable at the exclusion of another group of people. It's about everyone prospering and succeeding. And it's really, not only is it a moral imperative, but it's an economic necessity. There's many reasons that the enrollment may be declining, you know, but one of them is retention. Enrollment's declining all over the country, really. There would be a real economic impact if the university, because of our retention issues, particularly with students of color, impacted the community, because students go out and they purchase and they shop and, you know, they bring money to the community. So
that is what I have felt the campus community and the community at large almost have a disconnect. It's almost like a us versus them. And it's really a symbiotic relationship.
Yeah.
Revenue is generated through faculty, staff,
right,
students, and there needs to be a greater relationship between the community and the campus community. Frequently, we have community members who express a displeasure about the greater influx of students from other socioeconomic groups, from other cultural groups.
Mm-hmm.
How do we bridge that gap? Or how can we create a better bridge so we can work more equitably together?
There are some plans to do a lot more town gowns. That is old narrative of the college town and the university sort of being the ivory tower and, you know, the folks in town and that type of thing. But I've seen a lot just in my short time here, particularly the city manager and the president of the university and others really trying to work together and bridge those gaps. And I think it's important to everyone right now, and everyone is all in, all hands on deck to do that. So I think it's about keeping communication open, communicating well, having dialogues, creating environments of trust where people can feel free to speak. Like I've been sort of thinking, I think like a psychologist, I can't help it. So there's, you know, there's one narrative that the students have and another narrative that the city or the surrounding community may have. We have to create a third narrative where there is a healing and a transformation and a coming together so this community can thrive and carry on, you know.
If you're just tuning in, this is Through the Eyes of Women. I'm Lorna Bryant, and joining me in conversation is Dr. Cheryl Johnson, HSU's new Executive Director of the Office of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. So two things have occurred over the last 12 to 16 months. There has become a division and polarization of our country, specifically with the current administration in the White House, and it has caused division, an uptick on racism, violent acts against people of color, marginalized people. Now, do you anticipate that this change will intensify the need for programs here on campus and special support for students and faculty and staff here in this community?
Just want to include, there's also been a rise of violence against LGBTQ plus community as well. You know, everybody gives Trump that credit for that. I'm assuming that's who you're talking about. But I think a lot of what's feeding into things as well is social media.
Mm.
And, you know, it's designed to sort of either be all or nothing, one way or the other way. You unfriend or something's this way or that. There's no gray area at all in social media. So people's critical thinking skills and analysis, that's been impacted. There's white people who have felt marginalized over the last 15 or 20 years who have not been able to kind of ride the wave of change around technology advances and various industries closing down. So there's that. There's social media where you can really go on and be anonymous and just let all those primitive urges out and nobody knows. So it sort of creates a perfect storm, you know, and then you know, he was part of it, President Trump, but he's not the reason it was always there, you know, so it's just like this kind of perfect storm that's been happening. And I think that's what we're experiencing. It's almost like the last gasp before it's all over, you know, because the country is changing. It's like trying to put the genie back in the bottle. We're a diverse state, California particularly, you know.
And more on a personal and local level, there was a recent murder of the African-American student David Josiah Lawson, and it sent the university and surrounding community into immediate crisis mode. And you accepted this position in the midst of this crisis. If I remember correctly, you were here visiting right after the person who was initially charged with his murder was released. Mm-hmm. And you got to witness how the community reacted or has reacted to the death of the student. Now, has this tragedy shifted or shaped any plans for your office moving forward, especially with the academic year beginning in just a few short weeks? And we'll have new students arriving with David Josiah Lawson's death right at the forefront still.
Yeah, I can remember being called and asked, well, did I still want the position?
Wow.
And, you know, and I just felt like I would want it all the more, you know, because there's the students and all students, and they need me here too, as much as is in Berkeley. I want your listeners to understand that it's really going to take a campus-wide effort, not just me, one person, one office, but it's going to take cabinet, it's going to take the Senate, it's going to take deans, it's going to take faculty and staff, all of us. You know, I got very emotional meeting with a faculty person the other day, and, you know, we both said, you know, it's almost like he was this sort of symbolic sacrifice for change to finally push over and begin. And that is what I've seen in the march and when we marched and the city council's response to us and really following up with various work sessions and action steps. I think you've been a part of some of those yourself. So we can't give up. We've got to keep working. We have to honor his legacy, you know, because there's other incidents that happen here as well. That's trauma, though. Trauma's like that. You know, this university, as well as a community, it has been traumatized. And you have to approach things, I think, from that perspective. At least I do, you know. And trauma makes people do strange things sometimes until you can organize those emotions and then move toward change. And you can do that on a system-wide level, a community level, a family level, a group level, and on an individual level.
You mentioned earlier that you are trained as a clinical psychologist, and this campus was affected immediately by the trauma of Josiah Lawson's murder. And trauma is a painful thing, especially when it's not addressed. There was an immediate need for a therapist to come in from outside of the region to fulfill the need of counseling for students, particularly students of color. And frequently there is a misconception or a stigma behind people of color seeing therapists. But specifically, you want to see a therapist who looks like you, who identifies, who can relate to you. Therapists were pulled in from outside of the region. Now we have a clinical psychologist here.
Yes, there is mental health stigma in communities of color because that's part of being oppressed, though, and part of being marginalized, that you don't want to show the world you're weak, so we don't get the help that we often need. Now, I hopefully can partner with CAPS, that's the counseling center on campus, and work with the director there. I spoke about that when I was here for the open forum. I did some workshops before around historical trauma and just, you know, healing workshops. I think you have to kind of validate how people feel first, and then you can move toward healing, and that comes through listening. You know, I kind of see myself as an organizational development psychologist, you know, where you really work with the system on how to heal, you know. And it really is a system, an organization, an institution. It's got its own dynamics and personality, and you kind of have to look at it like that and assess it like that.
So you're joining this university at a very unique time.
I think exciting time, yeah.
So what can we expect from you in the coming weeks, months, years, as you gain your, what did you call it,
sea legs. Well, I think that first priority is going to really be partnering with the vice provost and getting the CTL up and going and the infrastructure, the Center for Teaching and Learning, which can really centralize a lot of the training efforts that have been, I think, up until this point, quite siloed all over the campus. And, you know, you've got a lot of folks who are getting fatigued because they're the same ones who've been doing it. And if you don't measure and evaluate, you do just kind of keep spinning around in circles. So it's really about getting that centralized up and going and then turning to what can I do and how can I partner with the community? How can I bring K-12 teachers in the community? You know, how can we partner and bring, you know, that professional development to them? Because the other issue around retention is retention of faculty and staff of color who have school-age children. If they don't feel like their children are being treated fairly and equitably, they won't stay. And then you've got that impacting the students of color who will come here. If they come and there's nobody looks like them and, you know, sort of mirrored back to them. And then once again, then you have an economic impact out in the community. So these things are not just kind of linear. They're multi-layered, they're complex, and, you know, racism, inequity, diversity, those issues, inclusivity, those have to be approached, you know, with a collaboration of various people and partners. You build relationships. I'm willing to listen to you more if I have a relationship with you. So that's kind of where I come from and what you'll be seeing of me.
What would you say to our community members who may have questions about how they can assist in this work?
Well, I think what will be happening on some levels with city officials, community organizations, city council, community members, and as well as university leadership, to create opportunities, probably also with community foundations up here, to create various forums, events, and activities so there can be that sort of bonding across the aisle, you know. Look for those kinds of things being advertised in the upcoming year, over the next 6 to 9 months.
Dr. Johnson, as of today, you've been here in our community. You've had a full month.
Yes, I have.
To take in and embody the Humboldt State experience or the Humboldt County experience. How are you feeling?
Well, I've come up here for quite some time, for years on vacation and motorcycle trips. And, you know, I stayed in Ferndale. Shout out to the Shaw House. I stayed in Ferndale. And then the big Victorian place in Eureka. I love Victorian architecture, so I've loved coming up here for years. You know, I've stayed in Arcata as well. So I knew what the landscape was like. I didn't know that there was such a history of, you know, people feeling unwanted, the racism. That wasn't anything that I really encountered all the years. But of course, as a tourist, I've probably got a different hat and lens on. But I think the thing that I really want to impart on your listeners is that I'm one person. So I'm going to have the help and the partnership of the people here, the community here. It's not an East Oakland narrative. It's not a Berkeley narrative. It's Northern rural narrative. And that has to be honored and listened to and appreciated.
Well, Dr. Johnson, thank you so much for joining me today. And thank you for accepting this position. I look forward to great movements of our campus community, great strides.
Well, thank you very much.
You've been listening to Through the Eyes of Women. I've been your host, Lorna Bryant. I've been speaking with the newly appointed Executive Director of the Office of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion at Humboldt State University. For more information about Humboldt State's Office of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion, visit their website at humboldt.edu/diversity. Through the Eyes of Women is produced for KHSU on the campus of Humboldt State University. Thanks to today's engineer, Jessica Eden, and the entire Through the Eyes of Women team. To listen to this program again, visit our blog, khsuwomen.com. You can learn more about the show and leave listener comments there. Join us again next Monday at 1:30 here on KHSU. Today's program is part of KHSU's Voice of Diversity Initiative, which is committed to sharing the mic with a broader spectrum of our community to facilitate important conversations and sharing in order to foster a healthier and resilient environment for all. This initiative will include oral history and storytelling about the experiences of the diverse residents of the North Coast, based on the belief that human stories build bridges.